Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Period Party. Nat and I are here to dish on menopause and all that you need to know this week. Hi, Nat.
Hello.
Hello. So just as an introduction, I'll talk about perimenopause. So basically, perimenopause begins on average around the age of 35 for most women. If you don't know the signs and symptoms of it, we're going to tell them to you, and we're also going to explain how you prepare your body for it. We'll break down signs and symptoms, the best ways to manage this new phase of your life with supplements, herbs, blood practices. So get started.
Totally. I guess what I think is important to establish is that I have a lot of women that come into the clinic that are told that they're going through early menopause, and you know, 9 times out of 10, that's so not the case. It's just that they're experiencing some type of hormone imbalance. And you know, I think obviously our bodies transition through various phases over our lifespan, and it's important to understand what they are, but it's also important to look at signs and symptoms, every day of what your body's telling you to help you decipher exactly what's going on. And always coming back to trying to lead your body towards balance no matter what, whether you are perimenopausal, menopausal or postmenopausal.
Agreed. Yeah, I cannot. And I feel too, who are in their, you know, early to mid 30s, are being told the same. Almost always able to restore ovarian function. So it's really interesting that this is it's not a good one.
No, exactly. Absolutely. So, first of all, what would you say to a woman that is 35, starting to show signs that, you know, her hormones are changing and wants to have a child?
Yeah, I mean, so the first thing, obviously, we really look at what her diet has been like, especially over the last couple of years, because I just really have found, too, and maybe you've seen this as well, Nat, like, I have a lot of coming to me who are, you know, they're a little freaked out because, you know, everything worked pretty regularly until about age 30, 31-ish, and then things started to subtly shift. And I think that's, you know, that's really a sign of, uh-oh, did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Did you lose me? Okay, good. Just checking.
No, you're there.
I thought, you know, just my wonderful internet. But anyway, no, what I was saying was that things start to change around your early to mid-30s, and it's just like another phase, and not necessarily perimenopause, but your body is just much more prone, or maybe not as, resilient, I suppose you could say, as in your 20s, to stress and really crappy food and various things like that you could definitely withstand better when you were younger. So I always just, first of all, comfort them and say that this is probably pretty normal what's happening, and it's just, again, a sign that you just have to take more supreme care of yourself rather than, you know, letting all of that self-care fall by the wayside.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that I've had, you know, obviously women have children well into their late 30s. Some women are having children well into their late 40s, actually. You know, I think that if you are able to always preserve, or not preserve, but always maintain a good level of hormone health, then you've got a much better chance of being able to conceive naturally. It doesn't mean that you're going to get to 35 and all of a sudden your clock stopped. That is just the biggest myth. And I have so many women come to me and they're in such a panic and such a hurry because they've been told that they are going through early menopause, that they need to fall pregnant yesterday. And the amount of anxiety and what it does to your body's stress levels is so counterproductive. Mm. And that is very often the reason why you won't be able to fall pregnant, is because you've got a belief running that your time is up. And that's certainly certainly not the case. And I would be looking at a woman in her early to mid 30s as being, you know, that her fertility potential is still huge, and many women will go on to have children at that age. And I mean, the other thing that we need to also be mindful of is that on the other side of the fence, that there are women that are still menstruating well into their 50s and sometimes early 60s. You know, it just, there's no clear cut way that this is going to play out for you. I think that's what's important to understand, that there's no Bible that's going to step it out, plan, you know, step by step for you. You need to wait and see what your body is actually doing as well.
Oh my gosh, totally. I mean, it's exactly the same for all girls who get their periods, say, at, 10 years old versus other girls who get their periods at 16. I mean, we're all so incredibly different. So I agree with you. I mean, I have seen so many women get pregnant between 40 and 45 naturally, and it is just a matter of what are you doing to maintain your, your reproductive hormonal health and just your overall health in general. So, yeah, I mean, like, I would say for someone, and I agree with you, look, so many women also come to me freaking out about this 35 thing. It's really interesting because it is such a thing in our society, and I don't know that it exists in other places. I'm really curious about that, Western versus other countries. But
I don't think they actually give so much focus to it, do they? Like other countries, I don't think that they're so fixated on what they can't achieve. You know, we in the West, we are very fixated on what we can't do. And it's such a barrier for so many people because they focus on what they can't do rather than what they can do.
I know. And there's so much you can do. That's the thing.
Yeah,
I mean,
we have to say,
yeah, right, exactly. I mean, I definitely think that we're at the point now where for so many of us, if women can just really start to look at sort of the overall big picture, like what is going on with, again, we talk about this a lot, your gut health, how is it feeling?
Mm.
And we check in and pay attention to those signs and symptoms. And ultimately, like, that would be the place to start for so many women if they are experiencing some kind of hormonal shift that is not feeling very favorable, or they've been trying to get pregnant and they can't in their mid to late 30s. So it's really just like starting with the basics, like we talk about often.
Absolutely. I mean, and for those of you who are wondering what perimenopause, you know, what does it feel like? What does it look like? Again, it does differ from woman to woman. You know, obviously one of the general things you tend to see is that your periods start to change. They might not be as regular. They might start to become a lot heavier. When you do actually have your period, you might even experience, bleeding that not only is heavier, but it might be longer. Other signs and symptoms that I tend to see, I see a host of symptoms in the clinic that I don't even think that are characterised as typical, but, you know, things like headaches, fluctuations in body temperature, you know, sweats, hot flushes, those sorts of things that are typically characterised by perimenopause and then menopause. I see patients with skin problems. I see patients that, I remember having one patient that she had chronic sore throat, chronic, all the time. And there was nothing wrong necessarily with her throat. It was the hormone changes that were resulting, and that's where it was presenting to her. So, I mean, it can be a host of things. Do you have any others that you typically see, Nicole? The other things that I tend to, and I think it's really important that on the other side of the fence as we move through the years, I think it's important to also understand that there are a lot of women that will experience perimenopause or menopause symptoms very quickly when they've had either their ovaries removed or a hysterectomy. And, you know, my concern around that is that what we know is that the ovaries take on a different role after menopause occurs. So what tends to happen is, you know, for many women, their perimenopausal symptoms will last actually quite a long time and potentially longer than they would have lasted even 20 years ago. And this is because so many women are estrogen dominant nowadays. They've got too much estrogen in their body. And part of the role and what happens when we transition through perimenopause is that our adrenals come along and help in that process. What the problem is nowadays is that we are living a life that is highly stress focused, and the adrenals are working overtime. So rather than just releasing cortisol and adrenaline in times of high stress, we're living in a stressful state pretty much all the time. So our adrenals are constantly in overdrive, constantly secreting cortisol and adrenaline. Now, the problem with that is that rather than picking up that function of what that they're supposed to do, they can't take on that role. The adrenals can't do what they're supposed to do because they're so overworked. And so this is where we start to see this drawn-out process through perimenopause. It really should be a fairly swift transition and fairly painless. When I say painless, fairly a bit of a non-event. And it should be something that, you know, you've got a few indications, your period's changing, things like that. But aside from that, there shouldn't be too much else going on in these situations. What we're seeing is that, like I said, it's this drawn-out process. It's often, you know, not a pleasant experience. Many women dread going through that phase. Their emotions are all over the place. And, again, it's all because we've got too much estrogen in our body, and basically we can't fulfil this transition properly. Our body's sort of stunted as a result, and it takes a very long time to transition through. So knowing this, One of the key ways that I help women in my clinic transition through is to lower their estrogen levels. And obviously managing stress and getting stress under control is one of the key things you can do to get your estrogen under control. The other and the funny thing is also, and I think it's important to add, is that for so long we have believed that menopause was this rapid decline in estrogen. But if our estrogen levels are remaining really high, again, that's not necessarily what's happening. So we're learning so much more about the transition than what we ever have before, and that it's not necessarily this, you know, big rollercoaster drop in estrogen. That's not happening. So other things we can do, obviously, you know, the no-brainers, and we talk about these all the time, but it's important for our new listeners to reiterate. Removing chemicals and, you know, chemicals in our body products, in our shampoos, our shower gels, our cleaning products, our laundry detergent, our dishwashing liquid, what we clean our floors with. All of these things contain xenoestrogens that mimic our body's own estrogen. So if we want to help to lower our estrogen levels, that's also one very easy thing that we can implement as of today to start to help to shift our estrogen levels in the right direction. And I find that very useful.
I just want to let you know I'm back.
Hi. Oh, you're back.
I just want to let you know I'm back.
Is there anything to add here, Nicole?
No, it's fine. I just thought I would let you keep going. I apologize. Oh, my goodness.
We're
like
twigs.
I
know Nicole's having some internet troubles. You know, we can never, between the two of us, it's like yin and yang. Someone's always having internet trouble and the other one's okay. Usually it's me.
So that's a good thing, I suppose.
No, right? So we're just talking about, you know, I'm in my experience. What I'm did you hear all of that, Nicole?
Mhm. Oh, wait, what, sorry?
You did. So obviously what I'm saying is that in my experience, so many women are approaching perimenopause with high estrogen levels, and it's becoming a really big problem because obviously the adrenals need to fulfill their function and take on the role of the ovaries through that process, and that's not actually happening.
Yeah, because our adrenals are so burnt out from our crazy 20s and 30s, hard living.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So I was just saying, you know, I'm just talking about how we can lower our estrogen to help with that transition through perimenopause. So removing those xenoestrogens, phytoestrogens, you know, the estrogens that are in our foods and plants, things like soy and alcohol, and some, you know, there are others, nuts and seeds, there's certain nuts and seeds and things like that as well. You know, being able to remove stress, I mentioned, just these little things that we can implement to help to set our hormones up and put them on the right track to then allow our bodies to happily transition through perimenopause and menopause. And the other thing I was saying that I think is really important to touch on, and I'd love your feedback on this too when you went missing, is that so many women are experiencing early onset because they have had either a hysterectomy or their ovaries removed, and then, of course, these symptoms come flooding in very quickly. And, you know, I think it's also encouraging women to explore their options around that. It's not to say that it's not a necessary procedure, but so many women are having full hysterectomies for ridiculous reasons, and it's easier for a surgeon to remove the whole thing rather than you know, address the problem sometimes. I know I like to use my mum as an example because she's been the most experienced, I guess, that I've had over a long period of time hands-on watching someone transition. And she had very large fibroids that were stopping her from going through menopause properly. And because the estrogen that was being fed to her body, you know, these not only did the fibroids continue to grow, but they were also having a major impact on her cycles. And anyway, point is, she went to several specialists for an opinion. They all wanted to give her a full hysterectomy, and she was like, no, my organs are supposed to be there for a reason. We know that the ovaries take on a different role post-menopause. So, you know, she was very concerned with that, and she found somebody who actually performed the surgery of removing the fibroids. It was a six-hour surgery, and basically they went in and they removed three grapefruit-sized fibroids, rather than just fully taking out the uterus. And so it is important that we explore our options and find people that can help us, you know, approach health the way that we want to approach it. Because sometimes, and very often I'd actually say, that the surgery of a hysterectomy isn't ideal. You there, Nicole? Oh, we've lost you again. Oh, there you are.
There I am. Ah! All right, I'm back.
There you are.
Let's keep going.
Do you have anything to add to that?
I know, this is maddening. Well, it would be awesome if you'd said, but no, I mean, I have a lot of it. I mean, the first thing in reference to just our adrenals and really helping to support them, I think that that's a huge part of this because I just feel like at younger and younger ages, we're burning ourselves out. And, I mean, before, I don't feel like we were seeing girls who were in their really early 20s with full-on hormonal imbalances, but we're seeing that now. And, it just gets progressively worse because it's not treated at the root cause. So by the time they're 34, 35, 36, there's a large combination of things. It's not just, you know, your adrenals are burnt out. It's actually your thyroid has been really struggling for years too, and your thyroid is so intricately connected to your ovarian function that if it's not working, it's really difficult for women to get pregnant. I mean, I see that over and over again. Almost across the board, if a woman comes to me and we're talking about fertility and period issues and all of these things, one of the first things I say is, well, what's going on with your thyroid? And almost all of them are on some kind of thyroid medication or have been on it at some point. And I don't know if you're seeing that, but I see a ton of that.
Well, I also see a lot of women that, when it comes to their thyroid, again, it's not fixing the problem, it's just using medication to treat symptoms.
Right.
And so many women told that there is no other way. You have to take this medication. That is the only option you have.
I know.
We've been able to treat so many women in the clinic for thyroid problems, and I quite like treating thyroid problems. It comes up with a lot of challenges, though, like in trying to integrate treatment, I find very tricky. But it is treatable. There is a reason that your body is doing something, and very often, again, you know, let's compare it, let's bring it all back to what's your gut doing and what's going on there, and is it working in the right way, and is your body trying to attack itself?
Exactly. I know that's definitely happening a lot these days. And I think that, so we're looking at supporting adrenals, obviously, a lot of self-care, really taking time to, you know, look after yourself and rest. I mean, that's the only thing that can heal your adrenals then, truly. You can supplement a lot, but if you literally don't take time to take care of yourself, I mean, it's not going to be addressed. And one of the best things I've seen to help with adrenals is vitamin C. Just large doses of vitamin C, because your adrenals use up a lot of vitamin C, especially when they're working overtime. So I always recommend about 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams a day of vitamin C for about 2 to 3 months to see if that helps jumpstart adrenal function, along with making sure that you're sleeping by 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night at the latest, and really trying to get 7 to 8 hours a night, and really just like taking care of you. I mean, doing things that make you feel happy and make you feel fulfilled and recharge you rather than depleting you. I just think that so many of us are, you know, in a place where we're just, you know, trying to get through the day and take care of everyone around us. And it's impossible to really give to the people in your life, your family, your friends, your kids, your husband, wife, whoever, if you're coming from a place of complete burnout and exhaustion. And I see that so often. And it's just like the whole idea of putting on the oxygen mask before other people. And I really believe that for women, we need to do that, because we are the people who are holding together households for the most part, and, of course, maintaining jobs and all these other things at the same time. So we got to find that place that we plug into at the end of the day, kind of like we would plug our phones in to charge. It's kind of the same thing for us.
Absolutely. The thing is interesting, too, that you say having time for yourself. I mean, very often women who are approaching menopause, especially, and through that perimenopause transition, they are often mothers. They do often have, you know, a brood of children to look after, and that's hard to implement that when you're having to care for other people and be responsible for other people. And I know that as a mum myself, you know, it can be our default is to look after them first, and you know, your own health tends to take a back seat. But sadly, when that happens, and I know when I let myself get into that state, you know, it's almost like all logic goes out the window and you can only focus on them, and you are functioning on empty. And you know, I know when I can get some me time in and I can actually build myself back up again, I'm a much better person, I'm a much better mother, much better wife, you know. so I think that is really important. And I think it's also important to hone in on your triggers and know what that feels like. So, you know, I know my adrenals crashed around 2 years ago, and it was certainly a wake-up call, and I had never, ever experienced anything like it in my life. And I literally, I slept, you know, when it happened, I literally, and I'm not really a sleeper, like, as in I sleep solidly, and I sleep solidly for around 7 hours most nights, and that's plenty for me. I wake up most times without an alarm, and that's perfect. But I lied in bed for a whole 3 days, and the pain that my body was experiencing was out of this world. I didn't actually have a choice. Wow. So the funny thing is nowadays, and it took me around 3 to 4 weeks to recover from that, and I didn't stay in bed every day for that period of time, but I, you know, I could definitely feel it in my body. And each day I would get a little bit, I would see signs of improvement each and every day, but I still had the evidence there that things weren't back on track again. And surrendering to that and not pushing through that is very important. And I knew it was counterproductive, because I knew that if I pushed, I'd just go backwards again. And I sure as heck wasn't going back to bed for 3 days. So, you know, I had to get on top of my own health to be able to facilitate the health of my family. But I also know now that if I am under a lot of pressure, I have warning signs, and I get pain in certain spots in the back of my head, and it's like a warning. It's like, uh-oh, it's time to back off, because otherwise I know what will continue to happen. So it's important to hone in on what our bodies are serving up to us, to know what it feels like when your body's being triggered. We've lost Nicole again. I think also, you know, remembering that we are all different, and just because my triggers are two little sites of pain in the back of my head doesn't necessarily mean that everybody else's will feel like that. Some people might just actually feel exhausted or constantly feel hormonal. You know, we're all very different in the way that that's going to present for ourselves. But I can certainly say that using that has been very useful for me in terms of being able to identify when to back off. And when I was experiencing the adrenal fatigue, Nicole, you're back.
I'm back, yes. Oh, good Lord.
Yeah. hard.
She's talking.
When I was experiencing adrenal fatigue, some of the things that I implemented were, you know, regular chiropractic treatment, acupuncture, supplements, you know, and a lot of rest. And I think, you know, like Nicole said, this rest is absolutely crucial, actually right across the board, whether you have adrenal fatigue or not, if you're not resting. You know, I think applying that rule of 8-8-8 is really important. 8 hours rest, 8 hours workout, 8 hours play. I was sharing that in a presentation that I was doing last week, and someone with the feedback said, I don't choose to work 10 hours. My company makes me. And I'm like, well, actually, that's not really true, unless it's in your contract that you have to work 10 hours, which I know it's not. It's your choice to do that. And, you know, I think that if we can thrive and we can function and put in quality work, you can achieve the same amount of work in 8 hours as to 10 hours. It's just that you're, when you're working longer hours, it's probably because it's taking you longer to achieve something because the quality of your work is being compromised too.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I mean, mm-hmm. There's so many things. Like when we're talking about functioning with, you know, subpar adrenal function. I mean, there's so many aspects to that. Like we've got, you know, the lack of sleep. If you're not sleeping well, if your adrenals aren't functioning properly, then you're not sleeping well. And when you wake up the next day, just one bad night of sleep, and you can have insulin resistance, insulin issues for the whole of the next day. And that makes you brain foggy and tired and just feeling like you're craving sugar and caffeine and unable to concentrate. So all of these things have a domino effect. It's just a matter of, you know, getting to that root issue again, like we were talking about. Mm. And I think for women especially, we're just pulled in a million different directions. So really honing in on that issue itself is so crucial, not only for your overall health, but for your fertility for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So yeah. For, I know you probably said a whole lot of stuff when I was missing in action, but I was just thinking about, you know, like we talked about lifestyle, obviously, and we've talked about food so much. We've kind of exhausted that. But I know in terms of supplements, there are two things that I really like that help women dealing with whatever excess stress, things like that. Rhodiola and ashwagandha. And I found those to be really effective. In fact, like some women who have not even had their periods, they've taken ashwagandha and gotten their period back. So that's powerful stuff as far as I'm concerned in terms of how it, you know, helps your brain adapt to stress. They call it an adaptogen, and it helps your brain adapt to stress. So I found that really interesting. And then rhodiola has also had a similar effect for a lot of my clients too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think the other thing too that, you know, this is where it is important that if you are trying to do all these things and you're not getting anywhere, you will enlist the support of someone that actually can tailor a program to you.
Yes.
Were you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, did you? Two people talking.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Is someone else crashing our radio show?
I've got to sort this one out for the next time. This is ridiculous. Oh, boy.
Enlisting someone to help you know, it can be so important because they can tailor what you need, and I think that's really important to be able to approach it from an angle that you are different from the next person, so what you need might be slightly different. And you can certainly try those, you know, the suggestions that Nicole and I make, and if they're not working for you, it doesn't mean that there isn't a solution. It just means that it needs to be more specific to your situation.
Yeah, absolutely agree. I mean, I just think when it comes to a persistent issue or condition that you're dealing with, and you've tried a lot of the different things that are online or you've read online or researched online, then it really is a good idea to seek the help of someone who really knows how to guide you in a strategic way, because you can feel around in the dark, or you can and take forever to address your problem, or you can just see someone who can really guide you. And I think that you know, that was what was so life-changing for me.
Absolutely. We are out of time for yet another episode of The Period Party. Gosh, we're good, aren't we? Well,
I know.
Until next time.
This is great. I know. Thank you for covering
absolutely.
For me.
Well,
bye, everyone.
No worries. Bye.
Bye.